This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I'd like to welcome you back to our series, In the Names of Allah. And in this session, we are continuing with session 60, though session 60 is in two parts. So we'll be doing the first of the two parts. But before going into the remainder of description of session 60, let me welcome back our students, well-wishers, followers, and whoever else happens to bump into the program and join it for the first time or whatever. You're all welcome. Ahlan wa sahlan. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. In particular, Nadira Tajuddin, she sends her salams and wishes for everything to be fine for us. And alhamdulillah, she's giving salams and wishing us from Melbourne, Australia. And Abdul Zahir, he sends salams, wa alaikum salam, Bibi, wa alaikum salam, Elizabeth Shah from Houston, Texas. Wa alaikum salam. And Bibi is from Toronto, Canada. And Hibo Ahmed, he gives salams. Barakallahu fikum. And without any further ado, we'll be moving on into our our main program. Barakallahu fikum. As stated earlier, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Session 60A, Al-Ghani, the rich, the independent, name number 83. And this is part one. As to the Quranic location, the divine name Al-Ghani is mentioned in 18 places in the Quran. Among them, وَمَنْ شَكَرْ فَإِنَّمَا يَشْكُرُ لِنَفْسِي وَمَنْ كَفَرْ فَإِنَّ رَبِّي غَنِيٌ كَرِيمٌ. Whoever is grateful, his gratitude is only for the benefit of himself. And whoever is ungrateful, then indeed my Lord is free of need and generous. Surah An-Naml, verse 40. In terms of the meaning, linguistically, ghani comes from the triliteral root ghain, noon, ya. And ghina is its verbal noun, which has four main meanings. The first meaning is to be self-sufficient and independent. And the second is to be free from needs or wants. The third is to be satisfied and content. And the fourth is to be wealthy and rich. This root appears some 73 times in the Quran in five derived forms. Examples of these forms are aghna, which is to benefit, be richer. Yughni, it benefits, it avails. Istaghna, he considers himself self-sufficient. The adjective غني is in the fa'il intensive form pattern of غاني, the present participle. Linguistically, غنى is used to describe a state of independence due to one being self-sufficient and free of need. The opposite of غنى is فقر, or poverty, which refers to being in dire or great need. Faqir is the commonly used Arabic term to describe a poor person. In reality, no one is without need except Allah, and everyone is totally dependent on him. Therefore, Al-Ghani is the one who truly transcends all needs and is completely satisfied, and is the one upon whose wealth, riches, and blessings all others depend. Linking Al-Ghani and Al-Hamid. Of the 18 times that Al-Ghani is mentioned in the Quran, Allah links it 10 times, that is 56% of the times, with his divine name Al-Hamid. For example, وَمَنْ يَتَوَلَّ فَإِنَّ اللَّهَ هُوَ الْغَنِيُّ الْحَمِيدُ. But whoever turns away, Allah is the self-sufficient, the most praised. Surah Al-Mumtahina, that's the 60th chapter, verse 6. The possible reason for this linking is that as human beings, we admiringly look up at the rich and praise them for their wealth, even though most of them don't share their wealth with the less fortunate. In a state of awe, we commonly admire and praise their wealth-based status. However, we usually save our highest praises and respect for the most philanthropic among the rich and famous. Allah has combined these two divine names in order to stress to us the importance of thankfully praising him for everything we have in this life, no matter how small the blessing may seem, because it all came from Allah. So he is both infinitely wealthy and most deserving of all praise due to his countless bounties bestowed upon his creation. Furthermore, the relatively wealthy believers are instructed to regularly donate portions from their wealth charitably, not because of any need which Allah has from them, but in order that we become a part of the praiseworthy effort to decrease the gap between the rich and the poor in our societies. As to the portion of what is given, which actually reaches Allah, Al-Ghani, it is only our pious mindfulness of him which is behind it. And as Allah Almighty himself said regarding ritual animal sacrifices during Hajj, لَنْ يَنَالَ اللَّهَ لُحُومُهَا وَلَا دِمَاؤُهَا وَلَكِنْ يَنَالُهُ التَّقْوَى مِنْكُمْ. Neither their meat nor their blood reaches Allah, but it is your piety that reaches him. Surah Al-Hajj, verse 37. Whenever the believers give sincerely in charity, they should know that Allah is the richest, Al-Ghani, and he will reward them for their charity and multiply it many times over. Consequently, complete thanks and praise, Hamd, belongs to Allah, Al-Hamid alone. Since everything belongs to him, no one can do him any favors, as it is he alone who does everyone favors. With regards to Allah's unique self-sufficiency, Ibn Jarir at-Tabari stated regarding the verse on Allah, Al-Ghani's unique self-sufficiency, وَعَلَمُوا أَنَّ اللَّهَ غَنِيٌّ حَمِيدٌ. Know that Allah is self-sufficient and praiseworthy. Surah Al-Baqarah, verse 267. O people, know that Allah has no need for your charitable donations or anything else. He only instructed you to give charitably and made it an obligation in the form of zakah to be paid from your wealth as a mercy from himself for you in order to make your dependence independent and to strengthen the weak among you and that you be thanked for it in the next life and rewarded and not from any need he has for it from you. All of creation is in need of Allah, as he said, Ya ayyuhan nas, antumul fuqara'u ila Allah. O people, you are poor and in need of Allah. Wallahu huwa al-ghaniyul hamid. While Allah is the rich, the praiseworthy. Surah Fatir, verse 15. Allah is not in need of anyone in what he created or creates, what he planned or is planning. He gives and provides for what he judges and allows to take place. No one can repel his decision, and he's able to do whatever he wishes. Al-Khattabi said that Al-Ghani, the independent, is the one who has absolutely no need from creation. Allah does not need either help or support for his kingdom in any way. He has no need from them at all, for they are poor and in total need of him. Allah described himself in the Quran saying, وَاللَّهُ الْغَنِيُّ وَأَنْتُمُ الْفُقَرَاءُ. Allah is rich, while all of you are poor and needy. Surah Muhammad, verse 38. Al-Hulaymi said that the name Al-Ghani, the rich, means someone or something that is complete and perfect with regards to what belongs to it and whatever it possesses. So it is not in need of anything along with it or besides it. Our Lord, may Allah be praised, has this attribute because he has no need. Having need is a form of deficiency. For one in need is deficient or lacks what he needs until he attains it or obtains it. Thus, the one who is needed is superior based on his having something which the one who needs it doesn't have. Deficiency in any way, shape, or form is totally rejected from being associated with Allah, the Eternal, in all circumstances, and weaknesses cannot be attributed to him in any way. Furthermore, it is not possible for anyone or anything to be superior to him in any way, as everything besides him is his creation. Everything besides him was originated by him. No one has control over anything of his, for everything functions according to how Allah wishes it and plans it. La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. There's no movement or power except by the will of Allah. So considering such comprehensive characteristics, it's inconceivable that there be anyone or anything that is superior to him. Al-Ghazali stated, Al-Ghani is one who is not dependent on anything besides himself, neither in his essence nor through attributes of his essence. In fact, he is detached from any connection dependent on others. Whoever or whatever's essence or the attributes of its essence is dependent on something outside of its essence, whose existence or perfection depends on it, is weak, faqir, dependent on gaining or obtaining. The real ghani, that's the real rich, is the one who totally has no need for or from anyone. One who needs and has what he needs with him is ghani, figuratively speaking. That is, the most that is possible for other than Allah, from a figurative perspective. As for being free of any need, that is just not possible for other than Allah. But if he only has remaining a need for Allah, he's called ghani in our world. If he had no remaining need at all, Allah's statement would be incorrect. Allah's statement, Wallahu al-ghaniyyu wa antum al-fuqara. That would mean that's not correct. Allah is the rich, while all of you are poor and needy. Likewise, were it not for it being unthinkable that anyone or anything could be totally free of any need for anything besides Allah, it would be incorrect to describe Allah as the grantor of riches. In terms of the application, according to Ibn Battal's four principles, principle number one, which is what we'll be looking at in this section of the session, session 60. The first principle is to adopt where applicable. The divine name Al-Ghani may be adopted and applied in two basic ways. The first is to recognize and understand the meaning of Allah's state of infinite wealth and absolute independence, and his creature's state of abject poverty and dependence. And the second way of adoption is to strive to become a generous friend of Allah, rich in faith and relatively independent of the creation. The first way that we addressed was to understand and accept Allah's absolute wealth and independence. Allah al-Ghani is fundamentally absolutely rich and dependent in his essence, having complete and absolute independence of all respects, in all respects, from every aspect due to his being perfect and due to the perfection of his attributes, into which no deficiencies can enter from any perspective. Allah is rich and independent. He is Al-Ghani. Because his richness is a necessary attribute of his essence. In the same way that he must be the only creator, Al-Khaliq, Al-Khallaq, the only one able, Al-Qadir, Al-Qadir, the only one able to do all things, and the only true provider, Al-Razzaq, Al-Raziq, and the only source of pure good, Al-Muhsin. He has no need for anyone or anything from any perspective. He is the absolutely rich, to whom belongs the storehouses containing the treasures of the heavens and the earth, of this world and the next. It is he alone who provides abundant wealth and relative independence for all his creation in general, while enriching special members of his creation with a flood of divine knowledge in their hearts and a deep understanding of the realities of faith in their souls. So the Almighty Lord is essentially rich and independent. His creatures are themselves fundamentally weak and lacking in all respects. Consequently, they remain intrinsically in dire need of their Lord. They can never be independent of their Lord, even for the blinking of an eye. Imam Ibn al-Qayyim's discussion of this topic can be found in the beginning of his book, Tariq al-Hijratain, Wabab al-Sa'adatain, The Path of Two Immigrations and the Gateway to Two Happinesses. He begins the book with an eloquent discussion of the issue of Allah's richness and independence. He entitled his introduction, Chapter on Allah Being Absolutely Rich and Independent and Creation Being Poor and in Total Need of Him. Quite a long title. He begins it quoting from Allah, Ya ayyuha an-nas, antumul fuqara'u ila Allah, wallahu wal ghaniyyul hamid. O people, you are poor and in need of Allah, while Allah is rich and worthy of all praise. Surah Fatir, verse 15. We mentioned it earlier. Allah Most Great and Glorious explained in this verse that the type of need which his servants have for him is of an essential nature, which cannot be detached from them. Of an essential nature, undetachable from them. It is similar to the way that Allah's being rich and praiseworthy are essential divine attributes and qualities, which are fundamental and are not acquired due to factors which he made obligatory on himself. Like when he said, Inni haramtu dhulma ala nafsi. I have made dhulm, oppression, impermissible to myself. Though he is the just. So that negates dhulm or oppression. Likewise, the need of all creatures for him is a fundamental, essential attribute, and not one acquired because he made its fulfillment obligatory on himself. Thus, the reason for this poverty is due to an essential human need and cannot be explained by changing circumstances or the possibility of a need occurring. Instead, it is fundamentally essential, an essential attribute of all of Allah's poor and needy creatures. Thus, the dire need of a worshiper for his Lord is an essential attribute, not an acquired attribute resulting from an arising need. Ibn al-Qayyim went on to say, there are two types of needs. The first is the forced poverty of natural need, which is general and from which neither the righteous nor the unrighteous can escape. This type of need is neither praiseworthy nor blameworthy, nor does it earn reward or punishment. Instead, it is merely a statement of the neutral state and station in which all creatures are created. The second is the chosen poverty of need, which is basically a product of acquiring two noble areas of knowledge. The first is the worshipper's knowledge of their Lord, and the second is the worshipper's knowledge of their own souls. Whenever worshippers learn both of these important areas of knowledge, it will create a chosen poverty of need within them, which becomes the foundation of their spiritual riches and the platform for their success and happiness in both worlds. However, it should be noted that the differences among various people's levels in this type of poverty is a direct consequence of the differences of levels in these two areas of knowledge. They're linked. Whoever acknowledges the absolute wealth of their Lord automatically realizes their own absolute poverty. And whoever realizes the completeness of their Lord's ability to do anything he wishes realizes their own complete inability to do anything simply because they wish to do it. Furthermore, whoever realizes their Lord's supreme might and power realizes their own absolute weakness. And whoever realizes their Lord's complete knowledge and wisdom realizes their own total ignorance. Consider the fact that Allah has extracted his creatures from the mother's bellies, from their mother's bellies, from the bellies of their mothers. In what state? He extracted them ignorant of everything, owning nothing, unable to give anything or to prevent others from giving anything, unable to harm others or benefit them, unable to do absolutely anything independently. In this state, the poverty of need for what is required to make us complete can clearly be seen and experienced by any and everyone. It is obvious then that this state is a result of an essential element of human nature, and whatever is related to the essential nature will continue to exist as long as the essential nature continues to exist. Consequently, one can never change from this state of poverty of need. For Allah's rububiyyah, that's his divine lordship, and his ghina, divine richness, we could never shift from that state of poverty to a state of rububiyyah and ghina. Impossible. Instead, we will remain forever absolutely poor creatures in constant need of everything from our Creator and Fashioner. Also consider the fact that Allah has showered his blessings and mercies on humankind and given them the means of improving the quality of their existence, both externally and internally. He has blessed them with clothing and favored them with hearing, sight, and hearts. And he taught them knowledge which elevated them above all of his other creatures and made them able to do what other creatures could not. Allah has also guided human beings and made them able to organize themselves and govern themselves. On land, Allah tamed horses and camels for humans. And furthermore, he gave them power over the creatures of the sea, as well as the ability to capture birds from the sky and to control ferocious wild animals in every continent of the earth. Allah also gave human beings the ability to dig rivers, plant trees, to split the earth's crust and construct tall buildings, and to protect themselves from all types of harm. However, after being granted so many blessings, instead of being humbly grateful, humans dare to think that some parts of creation actually belongs to them. And they boldly and openly claim that they have a share in Allah's dominion. Humans today see themselves in a different way from their earlier, more humble view, when they were obviously much more weak, much weaker, and exposed to the elements. With success, they soon forgot their previous non-existence. Their poverty and their need, until it seemed as if they were never poor or needy. They forgot their previous times of weakness. It's all in the past. It's history. This was Ibn al-Qayyim speaking back in the 13th century. Imagine what we would have to say about today. So, as the people today, in our times, as well as back in the 13th century, they forgot their state of need, how they were born and how they grew up. And they look at themselves as being ghani, rich, that the poor and the needy are other than themselves. Those who betray the truth become blinded to the reality of themselves and forget it. They quickly forget their former and current poverty, their dire need for their Lord, and they easily become arrogant and miserable tyrants. Kalla, inna al-insana la yatgha. Indeed, human beings are very insolent. And ra'ahu istaghna, seeing themselves without need of anyone. Surah Al-Alaq, verse 6 and 7. However, the most perfect creatures are the ones whose state of worship is the most perfect. They are the ones who are the greatest witnesses to the total need and their total need for their Lord and their lack of self-sufficiency from him for even the blinking of an eye. Which is why the Prophet ﷺ used to regularly say in his morning and evening supplications, "Aslih li sha'ni kulla." Correct all of my affairs. "Wala takilni ila nafsi tarfata ayn." And do not put me in charge over my soul for even the blinking of an eye. The Prophet ﷺ also used to pray, "Ya muqallib al qulub." ثَبِّتْ قَلْبِي عَلَى دِينِكَ. O changer of hearts, steady my heart in your religion. Allah's Messenger knew with certainty that his heart was in the hands of Allah, the Most Merciful, that he had no control over it, and that Allah could flip it in any direction he wished. How could the Messenger of Allah think otherwise when he was the one who recited to the Ummah Allah's words in Surah Al-Isra, verse 74, وَلَوْلَا أَن ثَبَّتْنَاكَ لَقَدْ كِدْتَ تَرْكَنُ إِلَيْهِ شَيْئًا قَلِيلًا وَلَوْلَا أَن ثَبَّتْنَاكَ لَقَدْ كِدْتَ تَرْكَنُ إِلَيْهِمْ شَيْئًا قَلِيلًا. And if I had not fortified you, you would have inclined towards them slightly. The Prophet's desire for his Lord and his harmony with Allah's wishes were all based on his intimate knowledge of his Lord, his closeness to him, and the status with which Allah held him. Allah clearly exposed this reality to those coming after him. For because of it, he was the closest to Allah with regards to intercession, and most prestigious among them, and the highest in stature due to his perfection of the status of ubudiyyah, or servitude, and faqr, poverty, before his Lord. Consequently, he would often proclaim, "La tutruni kama atratat an-nasara ibn Maryam." Do not exaggerate in praising me as the Christians did in praising the son of Mary. "Fa innama ana 'abdu faqulu 'abdullahi wa rasuli." For indeed, I am only Allah's slave. So call me the slave of Allah and his messenger. Furthermore, Allah himself in the Quran described the Prophet ﷺ in terms of his ubudiyyah, his servitude, in the most critical circumstances, like that of Al-Isra, the night journey, when he was faced with the challenge and ridicule of his pagan opponents in Mecca. Subhanalladhi asra bi'abdihi laylan min al-masjid al-harami ila al-masjid al-aqsa. Exalted is he who took his servant, Abdi, the Abdihi, by night from Al-Masjid Al-Haram in Mecca to Al-Masjid Al-Aqsa in Jerusalem. Surah Al-Isra, verse 1. As well as on other occasions, like those found in Surah Al-Jinn, Surah Al-Baqarah, verse 23, Surah Al-Jinn, verse 19, and in the hadith of intercession, when people on the Day of Judgment will first flock around Prophet Jesus, seeking his intercession, and Prophet Jesus will tell them, go to Muhammad, a servant whose past and present futures were forgiven. He obtained that status due to the perfection of his servitude, that is, his ubudiyyah, and the completeness of Allah's forgiveness for him. Ibn al-Qayyim then invited his readers to reflect again on Allah Almighty's statement, Ya ayyuhan nas, antumul fuqara'u ila Allah. O humanity, you are all totally weak and poor in need of Allah. Surah Fatir, verse 15. He then explained that in this key verse, God's name Allah is mentioned instead of his name of lordship, Rububiyyah, that is, Ar-Rabb, one of his names. He did that in order to permit the understanding of both types of poverty mentioned before. Poverty of need for servitude, that is, ubudiyyah towards him, and the need of absolutely all the creatures, and the poverty of need of his worship, that's uluhiyyah, which is the poverty of his prophets, his messengers, his righteous worshipers. That is the truly beneficial form of poverty. He then went into a discussion of doing good for expected returns, that is, ulterior motives. The goodness of Allah, first and foremost, Allah most blessed and supreme is free of any need from his worshipers, as we've said repeatedly. In spite of that, he is unconditionally good to them and merciful to them. That is due to the completeness of his wealth and self-sufficiency as Al-Ghani, his nobility as Al-Karim, and his mercy as Al-Rahim. In contrast, his worshippers are basically good to each other due to the immediate benefits they stand to gain from doing good, or future benefits which they hope to come from it. While further explaining the difference between goodness of the Creator and goodness of creation, Ibn al-Qayyim went on to say, indeed, Allah, may he be glorified, is rich and noble, powerful and merciful. He is good to his servants, even though he has neither need for them nor need from them. He wishes good for them and prevents harm from reaching them, not in order to gain any benefit from his servants, or to prevent harm from happening to himself, وَلِيَعَذَ بِاللَّهِ, but merely as an unconditional mercy to them and kindness. He, may he be glorified, didn't create them in order to increase the number of his possessions, nor did he create them in order to gain prestige from them after being shamed or degraded. Nor did he create them to provide for him or benefit him in any way. Nor did he create them to prevent anything from harming him. As he said, وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ. He only created the jinn and humankind for his worship. I only created, what he actually stated, I only created the jinn and humankind for them to worship me. Not because he needed. Allah goes on to say, وَمَا أُرِيدُ مِنْهُمْ مِنْ رِزْقٍ وَمَا أُرِيدُ أَن يُطْعِمُونَ. I do not want any provision from them, nor do I wish them to feed me. إِنَّ اللَّهَ هُوَ الرَّزَّاقُ ذُو الْقُوَّةِ الْمَتِينَ. Indeed, Allah is the all-provider, owner of power, the most firm. Surah Dhariyat, verses 56 to 58. In terms of the goodness of Allah's creatures, They are only good to each other due to their poverty, weakness, and need. Their acts of mutual goodness are done for the benefit they derived from each other, either immediate or in the future, as I mentioned earlier. If they can't imagine any benefit to be gained, they won't be good to others. Thus, they are doing good primarily to benefit themselves. They transform doing good deeds for others into a means of bringing the actual benefit of their good deeds back to themselves. They either benefit themselves by demanding or expecting immediate reciprocal reward, that is, I scratch your back, you scratch my back. The win-win situation, as they usually require some form of reward or its substitute in return for their goodness. Or they benefit themselves from expected praise and thanks from those to whom good was done, or from bystanders. Therefore, they are doing good to others specifically in order to gain from them whatever praise, compliments, etc. they desire. Thus, it may be said that they are doing good for themselves through good done for others. The other alternative reason for doing good would be because they want the reward from Allah. Allah Almighty in the life to come, in which case they're also doing good for themselves, still there, in the distant future. They are only delaying their reward for it for a time of greater need. In this case, they are not to be blamed for that intention, for they are poor and needy, and their poverty and need are a part of their basic nature. They can only achieve relative human perfection by constantly and continually being devoted to what is truly beneficial for them. In ahsantum, ahsantum li anfusikum. If you do good, it will be for your own souls. Surah Al-Isra, verse 7. Other human beings do not intend to do anything primarily or entirely for our benefit. Instead, their intent is primarily to benefit from us. Not for us, but from us. It is our Lord alone who does good solely intending to benefit us and not to benefit from us in any way. That is pure benefit, free from any harm in the least. This is in stark contrast with the intentions of other creatures who harbor, while doing outwardly good acts for our benefit, their own benefit. For their apparently good acts may have in them harm for us, even if it is only having to hear and bear their reminders of good that they did for us. Reflect on this, for reflection on this will prevent us from incorrectly expecting help from our fellow creatures and prevent us from totally relying on them instead of Allah. Most great, most glorious. It will prevent us from requesting from them any benefit or requesting from them to prevent any harm from reaching us. It will also prevent us from attaching our hearts to them, for their only wish is to benefit from us and not purely to benefit us. And that is the situation of all of creation with each other. It is the same as the situation of a child with its parent, spouses with their spouses, slaves with their masters, partners with their partners. The one who will achieve true happiness in this matter is the one who deals with others only for the sake of Allah, Most High, and not for their sake. Those who do good for others only for the sake of Allah and fear Allah in their dealings with them without fearing them along with Allah. Those who have hope in Allah, hope in His reciprocal reward for doing good for others without hoping for reward from others along with Allah. Those who love others for the sake of Allah without loving them along with Allah, as the true friends, the awliya of Allah, Most Great and Glorious. As he said, innama, as he quoted them, that is the true friends, the awliya, as saying, innama nut'imukum liwajhillah, la nuridu minkum jaza'an wala shukura. We only feed you for Allah's sake, without wishing from you any reward or thanks. Finally, other creatures do not know what is actually beneficial until Allah informs them of it. And they are unable to gain it for us until Allah Most High enables them to do so. Furthermore, they won't even desire to benefit themselves through benefiting us until Allah creates in them both the desire and the ability to achieve it. Consequently, the whole issue goes back to the one from whom it all began, the one in whose hands all good rests. Therefore, for our hearts to become attached to other than Him, by hoping, fearing, trusting, and worshiping others besides Him, is pure harm for us, with no benefit in it at all. And even if some benefit happens to come from it, it is Allah alone who destined it, made it easy for us to access it, and sent it to us. So how can we then attach our hopes, wishes, and fears to other than Him? In the full sense, of course, we will have hopes, wishes, and fears with regards to other fellow human beings, but not the full, where when other human beings disappoint us, we are broken, we fall apart, we are destroyed. No, that's a big mistake. In summary, we all should know, as the Prophet ﷺ was reported to have said by Ibn Abbas, that if the entire creation were gathered together to do something to benefit you, you would never get any benefit from it except what Allah had already written for you. And if they were to gather together to do something to harm you, you would never be harmed by it except by what Allah had already written for you. Barakallahu feekum. We have now come to the end of part one of session 60. Part two will follow shortly, Allah willing, and in it, with the help of Allah, we hope to cover the second way of adoption under principle number one, which is to strive to become generous friends of Allah, rich in faith and relatively independent of the creation. We will also complete the remaining three principles of Ibn Battal's four proposed principles for adopting and applying the beautiful names of Allah. And our usual closing dua, using the divine name Al-Ghani, will be made at the end of part two, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. So we'll now shift back to our third section, where we look at our questions and answers, or I'll provide the answers, hopefully. Look at their questions and try to answer them in the few minutes that we have remaining. Faisal Ali asks, I've seen you dislike mentioning the names of scholars who make mistakes, but other scholars mention their names and call them deviant and guide us to stay away from them. whom we can call scholar and what is the definition of a scholar? Because here, whoever speaks on stage, people call them a scholar. What is the best book on atheism so I can give dawah to atheists? And the best videos on YouTube on defeating atheism? Oof, you've asked for a flood. In terms of your first question, you seem to dislike mentioning the names of scholars who make mistakes. I don't know what you mean by that. I've mentioned the names of many scholars. And some of them made mistakes. I mean, glaring mistakes. Others, being all human beings, all made mistakes. There is no scholar on the face of the earth who never made a mistake. So what you're trying to say is people who may be labeled as deviant, you know, who have deviated, some scholars or others have labeled them as deviant, and I may mention their name. Where it is relevant, I don't have a problem mentioning their name. In terms of atheism and all that, that's a whole body of information, which I don't think we're going to have the time to go into. But if you look for Hamza Sortsis on YouTube, Sortsis is spelled T-S-O-R-S-I-S or S-E-S, something like this. Hamza, is Hamza T, you should find him. You know, he has done some of the best refutations and rebuttals to atheists. You can also find rebuttals by others, and you listen to them and take from them what is useful and beneficial and leave what is not. I don't know about the best book to refute atheism. Elizabeth Shaw questions, at what point should we stop begging someone whom we have wronged for forgiveness? Or should we continue to ask them to forgive until they finally do? No, it's sufficient for you to ask them for forgiveness and leave it at that. You don't have to keep repeating it. You know, maybe your repeated request for forgiveness, you know, can itself become annoying. You know, so you sincerely express your regret or whatever and leave it at that. The other point that the first person had asked, that is Brother Faisal Ali, regarding who is a scholar. And the definition which I heard when I was studying in Medina by one of the scholars who taught us, he said basically, once your knowledge of the various Islamic sciences, the major, because there are detailed sections, etc., that you may not learn or know, but in general, you know, whether it is Quran, tafsir, hadith, fiqh, and tariq, Islamic history, life of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, these areas, Arabic, where your lack of knowledge is less than your knowledge, you are considered a scholar. Meaning, you're capable of teaching others. You know, there's so many different levels of scholarship that, you know, it's a very general term. To me, scholar is the teacher, one who is capable of teaching in the full sense, not limited only to one aspect. Or they could be scholars in one particular aspect and not the whole. So the idea is that where your ignorance is greater than your knowledge in any particular area or in all of the major areas, then you should be a student. You should be learning from those who are teachers and scholars. The third question, or this is the fourth question, I'm grateful to mention that I have been selected as a Quran teacher in an Islamic school in Melbourne, Australia. Mabruk, may Allah bless your selection and make you a benefit to the people of Australia. I gain all the knowledge because of the BAIS degree. Ah, mashallah. Mashallah. I hope to obtain reward from Allah for the courses which I taught in the BAIS program, the books which I prepared for that program, etc. So I make special du'as for you to continue to earn reward for me. I have to thank you for giving us the opportunity to gain vast knowledge of Quran and Islamic studies. That's the main reason that I have gotten selected for being a Quran teacher. May Allah bless you a lot. Ameen, ameen, ameen. And with that, we'll come to the end of our questions. And inshallah, next week, this time, hopefully we will be able to do it at the very beginning at 3 o'clock as originally planned. And we ask Allah to accept our efforts to gain knowledge of the most noble area of learning, that is knowledge of Allah. Allah's, through Allah's 99 names. Barakallahu fikum, subhanakallahumma wa bihamdika, nashhadu an la ilaha illa ant, nastaghfiruka wa natubu ilayk. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.